Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Why doesn't anyone investigate the toxic effects of today's bureaucrat-run mega schools in the wake of school shooting? It's high time we place a share of the blame there. Apologists for these noxious systems continue to shift blame for their failures using the media, various left-wing lobbies, and kids themselves as programmed mouthpieces for statist agendas like gun control. Meanwhile, they keep feeding the beast by mass institutionalizing kids.
All right, so let's pause there. And whenever I hear a question of, why doesn't anyone fill in the blank? Well, it seems as though she's trying to, which means that someone is.
Mm-hmm.
So the question isn't, why doesn't anyone fill in the blank? The question is, why do people not pay attention when fill in the blank? And then there are going to be millions of reasons, because I know I've got other things to do than read every article that gets posted on the internet ever.
This is true. There's a lot of them. And there's lots of kitty memes that you want to look at as well. I mean, you got to balance. Would you want to know what's going on? Are you going to have to look through what is opinion and what is actual facts, and then kitty memes?
So I graduated with 377 others. There were 378 that started the senior year. One guy died during the year. So there were, 378 that should have graduated. 377 actually did. I think in the high school, and it was just 10th through 12th, was the high school where I went, there were 1,500 students.
Mm.
So, a sizable population for a school, and that was overcrowded. And then, they wound up splitting the district, and then both schools that were supposed to hold like 1,200 students were overcrowded the next year. And, so a large school with over 1,000 students, not uncommon for where I lived, but these where they've got like 3,000 in a school. My question is, how many grades are in this school?
Right, right. Let me ask
because
you something.
Because I know some places high school is 7th through 12th. Other places high school is 9th through 12th. Where I went, it was 10th through 12th.
Mine was 7th through 12th. It was quite a shock for a 7th grader to be in the same classroom with a 12th grader right across the room from him. But let me ask you about your almost 400 graduating class.
Yes.
Did you know all the names of those people? Did you actually know everyone? At least their names?
Yeah.
Back in the 30s, there were 248,000 public schools. And I guess that ranges all the way from K all the way to 12. And today...
Well, hold on. It says public schools. That could be elementary, middle school.
Right. K through 12.
Yes. Oh, I thought you said 7.
And for whatever reason... It's 2013, 2014. The number has shrunk to 98,000. So less than, or more than half.
Hold on. Well,
a decrease. Now, there are other things have happened, too. You've got your private schools and you've got your...
Right. That's what I was going to ask is, how many private schools are there?
And homeschooling.
Does this count charter schools that are technically public schools, but for some weird reason, everybody wants to think that charter schools aren't public schools?
We don't think that way, but I guess there are people out there who think that way.
There are people
they spend a fraction of what the public schools spend.
There are people that say charter schools are private schools. No, charter schools are public. They are government-funded schools. They are just privately operated.
Correct.
It is a government school. And then also you have to, depending on how the word public school is defined... A private school could be a public school. If they say, we are going to accept anyone who lives within 10 miles of this school, no tuition. They are open to the public.
What is wrong with small schools? Why do they have to...
You just mentioned it. They're not cost effective. If you're paying... Let's say that every town in New Hampshire, and there are, 300 and something of them, if they are all paying a superintendent $100,000 a year, that is less efficient than if there are, 40 different school districts that are each paying a superintendent. It's more efficient to have a slightly larger school district.
The reason it's a problem, the reason they can't manage their money, is because every school, in their opinion, every school has to have a Latin class, and it has to have every team imaginable, a hockey team and a baseball team and a chess team and a
ESL
debate team.
Teachers.
I mean, I never had all of that in my high school, and we were doing just fine. I mean,
I took 2 years of Latin in high school. So
sometimes if you wanted to take one of the special classes, you had to, after school, get trucked to the school who was
community college.
Or go to a community college, exactly. Graduate early, get your and take your pre what are they called, the any class you can take in the 11th to 12th
prereqs
at college level.
Yeah.
But no, the problem is that you have these school officials who demand that every school be the same and teach the same way and have the same classes, and they don't have the money to do it. Number two on this list of why it's unhealthy to send your kids to baby prison, the schools are abnormal. And this is one of the problems that I had when I was going to school, all grades, but it was most felt whenever I got into the public schools, where, you know, there was just, you know, so many kids that you had to blend into. Dr. Peter Gray at Boston College has studied in depth the harmful effects of mass schooling on children's mental health. Gray makes the point that school is simply an abnormal setting for children. But instead of admitting that our culture prefers to say that the children are abnormal for squirming, and so they want to jack them up full of Ritalin and whatnot.
Yep.
In short, school is a prison that actually causes trauma in children. Anxiety is a natural effect of being cooped up in a compulsory setting for hours on end, especially when you believe your future depends on your performance there. Yet few consider that environment as the cause or source of depression. According to a neighbor of the shooter in the recent Florida case, the shooter, quote, always had his head down, he looked depressed, unquote. According to the public defender, he's sad, he's mournful, he's remorseful. He's fully aware of what is going on, and he's just a broken human being.
When I was in high school, we had three main groups.
Mm-hmm.
Four. You had what they called the freaks. That was anybody who was into skaters, anybody that listened to Nine Inch Nails, anybody who was into punk rock, like all of those goth kids. I mean, this was before goth was goth. You know, like the beginning of all that, Marilyn Manson was just coming out and all that stuff when I was in high school. So all those kids got grouped together into one group. And then you had rednecks. And that was it. Like, rednecks.
Wait, that's two groups.
If you wore
jeans. Rednecks.
If you wore jeans so tight that they looked like they were spray painted on, you were redneck. Then you had the preps.
And they had belt buckles, too.
Yep. Yep. And some of them were on the Florida Bull Riders Association in high school. We had high school bull riders when I was in school in Florida.
And I'm the redneck because I grew up in Alabama where we didn't have bull riding.
Right. Then we also had the preps. So there was and the black kids and the, I don't know if I'm allowed to say the other word. It starts with a W, but I'm just not going to push it.
The Latins?
No. The black kids, the Latins, the white kids who thought they were black.
Oh, they were all in one group.
All one group. And this is, again, this is Central Florida in the late 90s. And so you had four social groups, and you were a part of
one of
them.
What about the jocks? Were the jocks?
Jocks
were preps,
split,
right?
Among preps, rednecks, and the black kids.
Hollywood has to simplify and dumbify things. In the book Forrest Gump was not a moron. Forrest Gump was a savant. But that is too much of a nuanced thing to portray on film. So what does Hollywood do? Moron.
Make him a moron, yeah.
I thought he was a moron savant.
They never portrayed him as a savant in the film.
How do you not pick up on that? The guy was brilliant.
They don't portray that. They portray that he was an idiot.
Yeah, it was between the lines. You had to pick up on it. And he was very lucky. He was a lucky savant.
They just played him. They portrayed him as a lucky dum-dum.
Yeah, Hollywood, this is their goal, in that they are going to, that they entertain us. And yeah, you have to have to sensationalize these things. Otherwise, it's...
And nuance is not allowed in film, and that's the point, is the woman here is talking about these stereotypical things that are being portrayed in film as if it is real life, and I'm just saying that real life isn't like that, and she hits the point like four times Number six. Right, let me just
read them, and then I'll get to, we're doing number six.
Jump down to number six.
Number four, public schools are breeding grounds for aggression. Number five.
And then she goes on to talk about a movie.
Correct. School bureaucracy tends to reinforce the social pecking orders, and I agree. Public schools are increasingly politicized. Identity politics and leftist politicization in the schools is pervasive these days. It especially piles on the young men, that label of guilty oppressor. Schools are becoming hotbeds of all sorts of political activity instigated by administrators and teachers. Privilege theory is now morphing into a new stage in which students engage in tell-all criticism and self-criticism sessions disguised as exercises in empathy. The message is loud and clear. Take part in this political activism or your social and academic standing will suffer. It's now commonplace to get students to take part in political marches and protests, getting them acclimated to acting
Conan
in concert
know how to pronounce words.
With a mob. And yeah, bringing kids into politics like you see so much on the this gun debate where they're going driving all the way to Tampa to act all outraged to, I don't know, the legislators there. Who's paying for those buses? Whose political, what political message are they actually feeding from? Is it really their ideas, or are they just being dragged into it? And that's the how I see it. I mean, what does a 10-year-old, what is high school, 17, 18?
You go from 14 to 18, usually.
What does a 14-year-old actually know?
As you and Will both pointed out, you've jumped around and hung out with people from every different clique.
I don't consider Will and I to be the normals.
No, we're not the normals.
I didn't
the
say
normals.
You were normal.
I saw this.
Everybody that I knew when I was in high school, they would bounce around and hang out with different people. It wasn't, you're a jock and you can only hang out with other jocks.
I went to a very small school and there was most definitely a hierarchy. There was most definitely cliques, and there was people, and there were most definitely individuals who would not leave their clique ever. They would not go and segregate with the rest of their peers.
And I think that that's the exception, not the rule.
And I think that life imitates Hollywood and vice versa. It's, you know.
Right, but again, Hollywood can't have nuance.
Well, I think also that it has, like you said before, it has to do with the size of the school that you go to. Like these huge schools where you kind of get lost in the mix, unless you have a clique, you're probably going to be more likely to be forced into staying into those cliques. But then you go to a small, like, again, like none of us had graduating classes bigger than 200, 300 kids. None of us went to high schools.
I went to what was one of the biggest high schools in the area.
In the area? What was the area?
Alabama.
Alabama is not an area. Like, you weren't in Birmingham.
Radical education reform has gutted school curricula of meaningful content, replacing it with identity politics, fads, and political activism. Kids are increasingly ignorant of the U.S. Constitution, the basics of civil society, and how our system of government works and why.
Our system of government doesn't work.
It does not. You're correct.
Nobody in D.C. gives two dams about the U.S. Constitution. And again, she, you know, keeps using the term leftist, so it tells you what her political bent is, to where, you know, she thinks that this document written 240 years ago is going to save us from government.
Not only that, but pushing it from with such an unabashed political bent, it loses credibility.
Right.
It really does.
This growing ignorance of history, geography, and classics makes it harder for children to find context in their place in the world. It disables their ability to think clearly and independently, and it cripples imagination and creativity. Such ignorance creates a vacuum for a more cynical and nihilistic approach towards life. And I'm a cynic, so I don't like.
And I also don't think that this woman actually wants children to learn how to think clearly. She wants them to learn to think how she thinks.
Correct. Yes. I would say if you went to this woman and said that we're going to take away the Pledge of Allegiance every morning, she would probably, yes, the vein in her head would explode all over you.
I want to make sure that I make this point very clear. We need to stop saying public schools.
Government-run schools.
Private schools do the same thing a lot of the time. And not only that, but because of our whole system of accreditation, private schools, basically what you get at a private school is you get a better qualified teacher to teach your kids the same crap they teach in a public school, just at an earlier age. Yes. So like, instead of learning how to do multiplication tables in third grade, you learn how to do them in first grade. But they're still teaching Common Core. But instead of a teacher with a bachelor's degree in education teaching your kid, it has to be a teacher with a master's degree, because since you're a private school, we're going to hold you to this other standard where you have to have higher qualified teachers than a public school to get the same accreditation that a public school has.
I know those private schools exist. They teach just like the public schools, public government schools do.
They just add religious courses.
The private schools that I went to as a young lad were wholly different. I was learning the phonics.
Phonics?
Hooked on phonics.
We were learning that, and then I went to the public schools, and then I had to relearn everything because I had done it all wrong. I had learned it, you know, one way, and then they turned around, flipped it on its head, and I found out that I had learned wrong.
Don't trust that walking out will bring an answer. Gun control or more laws is not and will not be the answer. You are the answer. Your greeting, your smile, your gentle human touch is the only thing that can change the world of a desperate classmate who may be contemplating something as horrendous as shooting a school. Look past yourself and look past your phone and into the eyes of a student who no one else sees. Meet the gaze of a fellow human being desperate to make contact with anyone, even just one person. You, if you really feel the need to walk towards the person. Your new friendship can relieve the heartache of one person, and in doing so, possibly prevent the unjustifiable heartache of hundreds of lives in the future. I know you. I trust you. You are the answer. And teachers, my fellow guardians of our youth, I know you too. I know the desire of wanting to make a difference in a young person's life. I know the thrill of stepping in front of a classroom of students, but simultaneously intimidated by the trust bestowed upon you. I also know the crushing, sometimes unbearable responsibility that your shoulders are asked to carry. But that's why you got into teaching, because you have big shoulders and a big heart. You're overworked, I would add underpaid, but you didn't get into teaching for the pay, so it need not be said. You're underappreciated and exhausted.
What I fear is that, and I hope this doesn't happen, that with all of this attention on the loner kid, on the lonely kid, that it doesn't backfire. And right. that these kids all of a sudden are now fearful of the lonely kid. And instead of going and confronting him and comforting him,
Well, you just said confront. That word itself okay, already implications.
Yeah, well, I meant confront in a positive.
Interact with.
Yes. Yeah,
and that's why I changed it to comfort. Yeah. But I mean, I hope that it doesn't turn around and blow up in someone's face. And not just the students, but the administrators are now going and targeting these poor kids who would never blow up, who would never.
I hate to tell you, but administrators were already usually targeting, you know, the marginalized kids. I don't have a problem talking about it now that I'm an adult, but for the first until I hit middle school and I moved to Florida, I was that kid.
Mm-hmm.
I was literally shorter than the shortest girl in my grade. I was the smallest kid in my class, and I was treated like the smallest kid in my grade. And in fifth grade, one of my teachers. I was to bend over and allow the other kids in my classroom to kick me in the butt.
And the teacher allowed it.
The
teacher probably instigated it.
School is a horrible place. When I lived in St. Petersburg, I lived across the street from St. Pete High School. And they literally had the magnetic buzzing gate.
Yep.
To let the kids on and off the campus. And
what?
This was in 2003.
Wow.
And it was to prevent kids from skipping class. There was a 7 or 8 foot tall fence. And you can go to St. Pete High School. It's right there. You get off the exit for downtown St. Pete, and you drive right by it on your way to Highway 19. It's on your right. There's a pizza, a drive-in pizza store on your left. And the kids would skip school. They would hang out in my yard because I had a tall fence you couldn't see through. I would come out at like 2 o'clock in the morning and find like 5 or 6 high school kids smoking doobies like in my backyard at my table. And I'm like, what are you doing here? And I'm like,
we're getting away from prison.
You're not going to tell on us, are you? Well, no, I'm not going to tell on you, but could you not smoke pot in my yard while you're skipping school?
Well, imagine, it's coming. More fences, more fingerprint scanners when you check in the morning, more locked doors. It's so good. God, I mean, we have a really nice high school here in Keene, and I've walked through those halls while the kids are in doing their thing, learning how to take tests, and it is scary to me.
Yeah.
It is Ender's Game.
Since I was 22 years old, I've sworn off the use of opiates. I don't like, they make me sick. So it wasn't really hard for me. And I've searched and searched and searched for other ways to treat my pain. And the Journal of European Internal Medicine, they did a study recently that finally, validates everything I've said for the last 8 years. They followed almost 3,000. Go ahead.
But before you jump into that, I just pulled up a statistic from drugabuse.gov, which is, it's a .gov, so, some government thing. But they have broken down the 64,000 drug overdose deaths in 2016 by the type of drug. So synthetic opioids other than methadone, 20,000. Heroin, 15,000. Natural and semi-synthetic opioids, 14,000. Cocaine, almost 11,000. Methamphetamine, almost 8,000. And methadone, 3,300.
Darren, where's weed at?
That still remains at zero.
Well, the article I've got here actually says that all 64,000 of those people died from opioid overdoses. The European Journal of Medicine did a study that followed nearly 3,000 cancer patients from 2015 to 2017 as they embarked on a medical marijuana treatment specifically for chronic pain. Each patient was able to choose a plan that specifically catered to their lifestyle and had 16 different strains of cannabis to choose from. Pain scales were ranked before taking the medicine and then measured again after treatment was underway. The results were overwhelmingly possible. Only 1,211 of the patients were able to be surveyed. 608 stopped treatment for various reasons. 902 of them actually died in that course of time. But 95.9% of those who were able to be, of the 1,200 patients, reported an improvement in their condition. The vast majority of them experienced a dramatic reduction in pain. While at the outset, 52.9% of patients rated their pain scale between an 8 and 10 on a scale of 10. After 6 months of treatment, the number of patients reporting that level of pain had dropped to just 4.6%. Said on top of managing pain, the study shows that cannabis was also capable of treating other issues that we all know it helps with. Of course, we've got the naysayers. We've got this guy. His name's Kevin Sabat. He's the founder of Smart Approaches to Marijuana. And he says that the studies missed the point that, of course, everyone knows that components of marijuana, like THC, have shown results for modest pain relief. But that's a very different conclusion than saying marijuana, which has 100 components, is good for you. So we need to distinguish between the two. Okay, well, how's this? I have a medical marijuana card. I use cannabis as a treatment for chronic pain. I smoke 3 very specific strains, and they make it to where when I cross my legs when it's cold outside, I don't want to cry. Daryl, you've physically seen this. You've seen when I don't have access to the kind of cannabis that makes my pain go away. When I pick my right leg up, it hurts. It's pain that will literally be with me for my entire life, for the rest of my, it will only get worse. And I can do that without wincing in pain and without being stoned out of my mind, without drooling all over myself on the couch, and without accidentally overdosing so that my children can find me dead and bloated in my bed when they come home from school one day. I can take care of my life, take care of my job, take care of a family, cook dinner. I can be a productive member of society, not be an addicted vegetable.
I used to smoke a lot of weed, like a lot of weed every day. Oh, yeah, all day, every day. I mean, the only reason I quit 3 months ago was so I can get a higher paying job. It's kind of hard to break out of the restaurant business, you know. But my point being is, when I used to smoke a lot of weed, the only main difference I've noticed since I've been without weed for 3 months now is I have dreams. Like, literally, when I go to sleep, I have very vivid dreams. And for better or for worse, I do have those dreams. But
so what's one of the better dreams that you've had recently?
No. Don't describe dreams. Not on the radio.
Oh, no. Yeah, I'm not going to go down that road, but yeah.
No, I'm just curious. Like, do you dream about flying? Do you, you know?
He can remember them again.
I do have good dreams, but I don't really have bad dreams, but I do have a lot of tedious dreams. Like, I go to sleep, but I end up having to do chores, and I'm still at work. And
I hate
really
dreaming about work. Voters in Denver may wind up being able to vote on legalizing magic mushrooms. The story here from Colorado Public Radio. They say after a few rousing chants of free the spores, a small group of roughly 20 filtered into the Denver City and County building on Monday for a meeting with city officials and emerged knowing that they may soon have the all clear to gather signatures on a measure to decriminalize psychedelic mushrooms. The group called Colorado for Psilocybin, after the scientific name for the fungus. Their proposed measure would do away with felony charges for people caught with mushrooms and make them the lowest enforcement priority for Denver police. Anyone caught with more than 2 ounces of dried mushrooms or 2 pounds of uncured wet mushrooms would be subject to a citation, less than $99 for the first offense, increased by increments of $100 for subsequent offenses, and never more than $999 per citation.
Better than a felony.
And again, this only applies to more than 2 ounces, which makes it sound as though less than 2 ounces, there would be no criminal penalties.
And what was the wet batch, 2 pounds?
2 pounds of what's referred to as wet mushrooms.
That's undried.
Yeah, and that's not a lot of mushrooms.
No.
2 pounds?
No.
Of wet? No, not really.
No.
I know nothing about mushrooms other than...
I mean, it's... You know, don't get me wrong.
I know people can get high off of them, and there are some tests showing that psilocybin does have some medicinal benefits, but as far as, like, how much... What does 2 pounds of mushrooms look like? I don't know.
I think it's funny that me and you are the ones that know all this stuff.
Well, no, not about weed. I don't follow the weed.
Right.
But the mushrooms, I'm all right with.
Mr. Matthews says he and other advocates want people to use psilocybin responsibly so that they can have the best experience with it. He says it's helped me tremendously with my own mental health, and on top of that, with creativity and really being able to just explore different aspects of myself and really get some healing from the inside out. He points to a study by Johns Hopkins University that found psilocybin users dealing with cancer-related stress reported lasting positive effects 1 year later. A study by New York University produced similar results. Another study conducted at London's Imperial College last year found that it could help treat stubborn cases of depression. That's why Michelle Ross joined the campaign to support the initiative. She's a neuroscientist and the director of Impact Network, a nonprofit focused on medical marijuana and women's health.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.